This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. It's Friday, so let's bring together the weekly news panel. We just had a total technical meltdown behind the scenes, so we'll wait for a moment to bring in Joita Gupta and Michelle McQuigg. But for now, let's actually set up the first topic, and then we'll welcome them into the show. So our first topic is indeed the throne speech. Parliament is back in session. It all kicked off with the speech from the throne on Tuesday. Governor General Mary Simon laid out the Liberal government's priorities.
To build a healthy future, we must also strengthen our healthcare system and public health supports for all Canadians, especially seniors, veterans, persons with disabilities, vulnerable members of our communities, and those who have faced discrimination by the very system that is meant to heal.
The speech also touched on climate change. Do we have the...
This is the moment for bolder climate action. Building a resilient economy means investing in people. But the work does not stop here. After all, growing the economy and protecting the environment go hand in hand.
Conservative leader Erin O'Toole found the speech lacking on the economy.
There's nothing in the throne speech that deals with inflation, the cost of living crisis, the national unity crisis. There's no plan to get people working. So I want Canadians to take one thing from this throne speech. To the millions of Canadians being left behind, we're going to be their voice on the economy. We've heard nothing from this government.
NDP leader Jagmeet Singh felt the speech was out of touch.
Right now, this is not a speech that demonstrates a willingness to work together or shared values about building a better Canada, but we want to make it clear to the Liberals, as we've said in the past, as I've said, don't take our support for granted. This is not a speech that looks like they're interested in working together at this point.
Bloc Québécois leader Yves-François Blanchet signaled his party would support the speech reluctantly.
Supporting might not be the best word. We will live with this empty piece of paper, gently read in three languages.
I know we've been able to connect with Michelle McQuigg, so let's welcome Michelle into the show. Hello, Michelle.
Hi, Dave. Apologies for tech gremlins earlier.
It's all good. We are well aware of tech gremlins. They are omnipresent in our lives. I believe we're still endeavoring to connect with Joita Gupta. Now, this is her topic, but it's one that we were all in agreement that we should talk about. So, Michelle, let's actually bounce the first question to you. What stood out to you in the throne speech?
What stood out to me, honestly, is how familiar a lot of this sounded. Many of these sorts of promises, even some of the specific language, harkens back, one could say, 2 years or even 6 years to 2015, when the Trudeau government first read a throne speech. So there's a lot in here that we've heard before. There is more emphasis on truth and reconciliation than I think we've had in the past, and certainly with a bit more urgency and definitely more gravitas, read as it was by Mary Simon, the first Indigenous Governor General that we've had in this country. So there was more talk there. The language around climate change has taken on a more of an urgent tone in keeping with more recent discussions and even recent events in parts of Canada. But I think for me, a lot of this sounded pretty familiar, and there were definitely some gaps. I'm sure we'll get to this later, but a couple of areas that where we didn't hear a whole lot of talk, where I think we might have expected to hear at least some.
Michelle, I also felt that there was a certain sameness to it. When we had our veteran political correspondent Craig Oliver on Wednesday, he called it an example of mediocrity. It was something that really stood out to me, because I actually felt
Craig really needs to say what he feels a little more often.
Craig's a bit of a free agent now, so he can.
I know.
He
I'm.
he can cut a little bit looser these days. But I've got to say, Michelle, even though, like, certainly we covered this on the show throughout the week, and we certainly are covering it again today, I did feel that it was a little bit ho-hum. I do also want to echo what you said about Mary Simon and the gravitas, especially when she offered some extra context on the land acknowledgement and what the land acknowledgement meant in her eyes as a person who's Inuk and Indigenous. I thought that was quite meaningful. But largely, this actually made me feel a little bit like the way in which we do politics is now maybe becoming so performative and so kind of starchy that it's completely disconnected, right? Parliament broke earlier in the year with some important legislation on the table. A lot of pandemic benefits expired after the election before Parliament sat again. So it's basically been months and months and months since politicians were doing their jobs in Ottawa. And it's really felt like, okay, here's one more activity that actually kind of means nothing, that's simply rooted in tradition.
You're definitely not alone in feeling this way. And I think all of this just went to reinforce a lot of the sameness messaging and sentiment that we've been hearing about and experiencing ourselves in some degree since the election. Because here we were, Parliament resumes, the seat makeup is very similar to what it was prior to Parliament dissolving for this election. A lot of the promises on the table are very much the same. Some of the same orders of business were ones that had to be reintroduced when the last Parliament was dissolved. So there was a lot of messaging, for instance, around diversity and inclusivity in different forms. One of those involved a bill banning conversion therapy for people who identify as gay. And that is now back on the table because it was about to pass, but the whole bill had to be scrapped. So in some senses, we're taking steps backward.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Thank goodness for Alexander Graham Bell. We've used the telephone to connect with Joita Gupta. Hey, good morning, Joita.
Good morning, Dave. It's good to see you in studio again. Sorry, it isn't Friday the 13th, is it?
It might. You know, the gremlins know no date or time. They cross all paths.
They're in COVID mode always.
Like literally. Yeah. I know, literally 30 seconds before we were supposed to go on, my computer froze. I was like, no, anything but that.
So, Joita, I'm gonna kind of skip over why you want to talk about this, because I think Michelle and I have already kind of engaged in the topic. But what stood out to you in the throne speech?
Frankly, not very much. I think Michelle might have covered off saying that there weren't all that many surprises in this one, very much in keeping with their campaign promises and the election platform. We're all very familiar. Lots of the usual priorities around making sure that they strengthen their commitment to climate change, Indigenous reconciliation. So you've got a lot of the same things happening all over again. I think that the childcare piece will definitely gain some traction as we go along. It definitely seems like that's one of those items that is going to pick up steam. You saw Alberta signing on to that. In fact, I think the only major holdout is Ontario on the childcare front, and likely they will sign up too as that provincial election inches closer to Ontario. So I didn't really get the sense that there was anything here that was jaw-dropping or astonishing in any sense, very much in keeping with what we saw during the election platform.
Let's talk about the reaction from the opposition parties. To my mind, I thought it was kind of business as usual. Jagmeet Singh didn't like it. Aaron O'Toole didn't like it. Yves-François Blanchet will support it because the Bloc Québécois doesn't want to go through another election. They don't have the cash to do so. But Michelle, what did you make of the reaction from the opposition parties?
Yeah, I had much the same reaction. This went along lines we would expect. It's very rare, especially these days, that someone comes out and says, yeah, good speech. I liked it. I'm into that. We don't see that very often. Indeed, there was not that much mention of the economy. You played Aaron O'Toole's clip off the top, and he's been beating that drum. But also, we're seeing talks about coalition that are coming from the Conservatives that are not necessarily rooted in what we're actually seeing. You heard Jagmeet Singh's reaction. He said, don't count on our support. It's probably going to come anyway, but the Conservatives are now already issuing press releases talking about the Liberal NDP coalition, even though there hasn't been a whole lot of evidence to that fact. But we've heard that the Bloc Québécois is planning to support this, if reluctantly or a bit tepidly, with that amusing quote that you played off the top. So regardless of how the other parties jump, this speech will pass. The Bloc support is enough to ensure that it passes. So all the posturing and all the comments from the opposition parties are kind of in keeping with what we would expect to see given the circumstances in Parliament and the scripts that these parties tend to follow.
Joita, any thoughts in regards to the reaction from the opposition parties?
I thought the BQ was definitely fence-sitting. You know, there's nothing there that we can support. There's nothing there that we can really oppose. It sounds like, at least with the BQ, they're not ideologically driven. They're not, you know, they don't fall to the left or the right. So they may be more willing to look at things favorably if it somehow favors Quebec. When you look at the NDP, though, I think the NDP reaction is interesting, especially during a minority government where historically the NDP has been in a position to try and get some of their policy platforms pushed. So when you hear Jagmeet Singh say things like it doesn't really have too many strong promises in there, you know, you do get the sense that the NDP is going to negotiate, try to position itself in order to negotiate, to have a greater say in some of the in trying to make sure that their policy agenda is pushed forward. And of course, Erin O'Toole and the Conservatives definitely looking at getting Canadians back to work. And I think they'll want to push more on the economic issues and making sure that they try and get a handle on inflation.
Let's talk about disability. Go ahead, Michelle.
Yeah, you're right, Joita. I'm sure he's going to try to negotiate, but it's interesting that there isn't a whole lot of starting point for him to get going with this. And that's, I think, one of the things that did stand out for a number of people was the fact that there aren't a lot of carrots thrown to the opposition here. This is largely sort of sticking to the Liberal platform and even stuff where there might be room for some agreements. If something like a pharmacare plan, for instance, which was a really high priority item for the NDP and something the Liberals have also expressed interest in, that was not in the platform. So Jagmeet Singh talked, among other things, about the lack of signs of willingness to cooperate. And I think that is something worth watching in the next few bills to come, is if that tone is going to change at all.
Yeah, I don't want to fall too far into this trap of like election mongering, because I think we fell into it last time. And I think every now and then people will look at the media as a chattering class when they do this. I will say, as you say, Michelle, there was no carrots necessarily extended to either side in terms of forming coalitions or partnerships. And I think that literally is the Liberals saying, you spent an entire election campaign saying Canadians don't want election. So prove it to us. Come meet us in the middle. Come meet us. We're not going to come meet you.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, it's a gamble. There's no question.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It seems to have paid off this time around. And there are times when it simply won't be possible. Something like a budget where there's so much more room and more impetus to push for things. This kind of strategy, I suspect, won't always work. But for a throne speech, it seems to have done the trick.
Let's talk about disability and inclusion, because I played that clip from Mary Simon off the top of the segment where she did mention disability, and disability as a lens did pop up a couple times during the speech. But that was not enough for the Alliance for the Equality of Blind Canadians. They sent out a press release shortly after the speech expressing disappointment that people with disabilities were left out. Joita, what do you make of that press release being sent out in regards to possibly disability not being a priority? Although I'm going to put it flat out here, I disagree with that premise completely. I heard mention of disability as a lens throughout the speech. Just because it didn't get mentioned directly, I don't see that as necessarily a huge issue.
Yeah, plus there was the point about mental health and making that very much a focus. That's also a disability issue. I think what the AABC was saying in their press release has to do more with a lack of concrete action on employment and wage support and income support for people with disabilities. It is a big piece not to have clarity around, especially in the aftermath. Maybe it's premature to call it the aftermath, especially in light of the pandemic where people with disabilities got peanuts compared to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I do understand where the frustration is coming from along the issue. Having a disability lens is a really important first step. And it is something that we have not seen in years past. So that is important. But I think what a lot of people are hoping to see is more concrete support and more tangible support for people with disabilities, especially around, as I said, employment, income, and housing is another really big one.
Mm-hmm.
Because as much as the government likes to tout its national housing strategy and the work that it's doing to build affordable housing or increase the supply of housing, the fact of the matter is there really isn't that much affordable, accessible housing. And that's a huge huge impediment for people with disabilities.
Oh, yeah. I know it's a topic you've covered on The Pulse. We've covered it here. It's a really, really important piece of the puzzle. There's no doubting that one. And I definitely agree with you. Concrete action is a big part of it. And that may be where the frustration is coming from. Michelle, I'm going to ask the sort of similar question to you in a bit more of an abstract way. When we start looking at things like a disability lens and sort of applying disability within contexts of other policy, at times do people with disabilities need to perhaps sort of use that as a bit more of a guiding principle in to say that maybe you're not going to get a section of the speech about disability, but disability is going to be sprinkled within the speech?
I think perhaps that might be an argument, but it's also worth noting that this disability lens is not unique to this year. This was actually a promise that was added to the Liberal platform in 2019, and we didn't hear that much indication about it. It may well have been applied at every level, and we weren't privy to those discussions. But those decisions were not necessarily obvious, and certainly not during COVID, when some very, very obvious gaps emerged that Joita alluded to. Housing remains another huge, huge gap where disability has not really been addressed. So I suspect that for a lot of disability groups, talk about this lens, it just feels like it's more of a repeat, and they're pushing for something stronger than what they're actually seeing. When words start to be followed a bit more often by action, perhaps you'll see people being a little more willing to sort of accept disability in smaller and less direct doses. But there were some big ticket items that were not addressed here, something like a disability benefit, which was indicated to be a higher priority for the government prior to Parliament dissolving. Mm-hmm. No mention of that this time around. So that has people concerned that once again, disability is going to fall by the wayside. Not a lot of discussion about developing the Accessible Canada Act, which has now been on the books for 2 years and still needs to have a lot of gaps filled into it to give it some teeth. No talk about that either. So I suspect that's more of what the groups were hoping to see more of. And in the absence of that, talk of more general principles and actions in broader strokes didn't really get the job done as far as they were concerned.
I love it when you guys catch me drinking the Kool-Aid, because certainly the expression disability lens can very quickly fall into the realm of political jargon and political posturing if it does not come with concrete action. Hey, Joita, thank you for having us re-tackle this topic. Glad you brought it to the table, but we got to move on. Coming up next, amidst ongoing human rights concerns, we'll consider whether Canada should boycott the Olympic and Paralympic Games in Beijing in 2022. This is the Now News panel on AMI. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.